When I was a little girl, my family lived in Southern California, far away from all of our relatives in Tennessee, Georgia, and Florida. And so when I was 8 years old, my family decided at long last that we would go to the annual family reunion at my mother's hometown in Jessup, Georgia. I had never been really to the South before, and I had not met any of my mother's relatives. So this was quite a lot to take in. What I remember particularly about that trip, other than the discovery of tatting, how my grandmother made lace and boiled peanuts that my sister got sick on, what I remember is that my cousins kept calling my sister and me Yankees and snickering at us. I didn't know what that was about. And then I noticed that my mother's family was using derogatory names and saying mean things about black people. And my mother's mother was just giving my mom unending grief for not raising my sister and me as Southern Baptist. And I can't honestly say that they were a very convincing advertisement for it. But wanting to be good guests, when Sunday came around, we agreed to go to my grandmother's church, Red Hill Baptist Church, a little brick building sitting up on the Georgia clay hillside. On a hot summer day, it was 1963. So when we got in there, because it was a hot day, they had the windows open, and there were no screens on the windows, and so there were a few flies buzzing around. There were about 15 people inside, and so my family and I settled into our pew. Well, before long, the preacher came out, and in no time at all, he had whipped himself up into such a frenzy that he was sweating through his white dress shirt. And he began mopping his brow, and then he loosened his tie and took it off and threw it over to the side and started unbuttoning the top of his shirt. And I hoped that it would end there. And in fact, the disrobing did end there, but the sermon did not. And it continued on with this sort of fire and brimstone language that was very new to me and a little bit confusing. So at one point, I looked over, I glanced at my grandmother just to see how she was taking to all of this, and there she was, sound asleep, snoring softly. And in my 8-year-old mind, I said to myself, this is not for me. It may be for them, but this is not for me. Well, I expect many of you have had a realization like that on your spiritual path or maybe in another house of worship. And in fact, this is what millions of Americans are essentially saying by fleeing organized religion. This is not for me. And that group, as I mentioned before, is the fastest growing segment of the religious landscape that the unaffiliated, also called the unchurched, are now about 1/4 of the U.S. population. That is significant. And when they talk about why they have left church, they typically say that it's negative, judgmental, hypocritical, homophobic, manipulative, and guilt-inducing. Well, we've never experienced any of that. But they say this, and they have the stories to back it up. And so several years ago, when I was at Unity World Headquarters, we did a survey of about 2,000 people to find out about their religious practices and beliefs. We asked them how they felt about Christianity, and we asked them how they felt about church. Now, to be sure, some people had positive things to say about church, a warm, loving community, a sense of family, that sort of thing. But by and large, the responses were pretty negative. And people were more than willing to share some of their experiences. So here are the few things they said in response to the question, what are your earliest memories of church? Guilt, anger, shame. I did not like the way they scared you into believing or you will burn in hell. My strongest feelings were of betrayal. I could see that on Sunday, while people espoused the teachings of Jesus, their other 6 days, They lived lives quite the opposite. We stopped going when the priest stated our names as being people who never gave to the collection plate. I saw many hypocrisies in the church. Example, my minister would talk about how bad adultery was, but he was married and dating the church secretary. This person remembers church as a place where my parents dropped my brother and I off so they could go home alone for a couple of hours. And finally, the earliest memories of church were having to get dressed up in uncomfortable clothes and go sit forever listening to the old guy talk and watch the old people dozing. Well, some of us that have had negative experiences in other churches have found our way to unity. But those who call themselves unaffiliated have not only left one Christian denomination or one church, they've left them all. They essentially have given up any hope that organized religion could ever be as open, as honest, as inclusive, as meaningful as what they need. And so they just chucked it all. Well, I think that is very, very unfortunate. And I'm not saying this just because I'm a minister. Because we need each other. We're not meant to walk the spiritual path alone. We learn from one another. We share the joy of the journey. And also, not every church is like the church they may have had the negative experience with. Church can be wonderful. I think our church is wonderful. There are actually places you can come where you can feel nurtured and supported, where you can feel recognized for who you are and honored for who you are. And the other reason I believe it's unfortunate that people are giving up on organized religion is that Christianity is changing. Oh, it may be happening slowly, but it is happening. So Phyllis Tickle wrote a book called The Great Emergence, How Christianity is Changing and Why. And in it she says that every 500 years, a transformative shift occurs in Christianity, and it results in a more vital form of Christianity emerging. And as it turns out, we're at that 500-year mark right now. We're about 500 years out from the Great Reformation of the 16th century. And what Phyllis says is these new Christians emerging will rewrite Christian theology. And she does call them emerging Christians, and in fact, that term is being used more and more. You may have heard it before. There are also what are called emergent churches. Emergent churches tend to come more from mainstream churches trying to navigate these new waters to be responsive to what they're hearing from their congregations. And so they broaden the ways in which spirituality is allowed to be expressed. They're moving away from dogma and more into practical application. They're more honoring of multiple paths. There's a return to mysticism and meditation so that people are not just talking about believing in God, but they're actually having an experience of God. There's more emphasis on social justice, on social action, and an increase in interdenominational and interfaith dialogue and discussion and collaboration. If you look around the landscape, you can see these emergent churches experimenting with different formats and trying to figure out how to get on board with what is needed to bring people back into spiritual community. And so what I take from this is that Christianity is changing, and in positive ways. And we need look no further for evidence than, of all places, the Catholic Church. And largely because of the refreshingly populist Pope Francis, we are seeing shifting occur. And on Friday, he issued a proclamation that translated into English is the joy of love. And in it, he calls for the Roman Catholic Church to be more inclusive and less dogmatic. He is calling for the bishops and the priests to provide more of a welcoming, open, nurturing environment for single parents, for gay people, for couples who are living together but not married. Now, we may wish that he would go further. There are those of us who are really ready to see the stand on gay marriage and perhaps who's allowed to take communion and those sorts of things. But the point is that a shift is happening, that progress is being made, and it's moving in the right direction. And so we can really take to heart, we get to choose what we focus on, we can choose to focus on the good that is arising and to affirm that and to appreciate all that has come before it to make that now our reality. So in the book Integral Christianity, which our spiritual discovery groups will begin studying this week, available in our bookstore, fabulous book. And by the way, it's written by a minister who used to be the head of a Baptist church in Kansas City, very big church, as he began to discover his own truth and realized he was gay and began to share his truth. He was basically kicked out of the Baptist church, but he continued to speak his truth, and that church continued to thrive. Well, in his book, he talks about the evolution of Christianity and the evolution of church and the different stages that it has come through. And so I'd like to summarize that for you. The first stage is the tribal stage. We go back to the tribal stage. You can see a little bit of this in the Hebrew Bible, or not, that wasn't around Christianity, but it's the idea of magic, of fantasy. It's a little superstition, an idea of bargaining with God. You can definitely see that in the Hebrew Bible. It's like, what does God want? How do we get on his good side kind of a thing, right? So there's a lot of fear there. The second level is the warrior church. The warrior church, might is right. We must be in power. We must control. We must dominate. We must get everybody on board with the direction that we believe is right. So we see this in the Holy Wars, in the Inquisition, in the Crusades. We see it in violent fundamentalism, including terrorism. The next level is the traditional level. Traditional is where about 35 to 40%, maybe 40 to 55% of those who are affiliated in our country and in the world, that's the level that they're at. Tradition, they just kind of go along to go along. You know, let's just not make any waves here. It's the way we've always thought. It's the way it's always been. I don't want to question it. That sort of a thing. So most of the mainstream Christian churches are at this level. So there's a lot of respect for the authority of the Bible and for church doctrine. Many of us are familiar with that level and may have friends or relatives or may have started out on our own path at that level as well. Well, next is the modern level. So the modern level says, we do have questions and it's time to ask them. There were doubts being raised, there were new points of view. If you were ever one of those people that raised your hand in traditional church and had a question, well, you were of this ilk, the modern, because wanting to take into consideration science and rationalism. Let's think this through. Does this make sense? And so the modern was actually seeded in part by the New Thought movement. Now think about this. New Thought is what Unity is a part of, but we have a sister organization called Religious Science. And there's a magazine, Science of Mind, and even Christian Science. It was very much into science and figuring out how things work. And even Charles Fillmore called God principle. And it was always divine laws, how do things work? Well, the next level is the postmodern level. And at the postmodern level comes the awareness that there's more to reality, if you will, than just the physical. Our consciousness plays into it. And indeed, the key lesson in this level is that we create our own reality. And so there's a respect for the ways in which we are co-creators. At the postmodern level, they acknowledge the science but say it doesn't go far enough. And so if you had a bumper sticker for the modern level, it would say question authority. If you had one for the postmodern level, it would say question reality. Really, what is reality? So at the modern level, it was all about scientific exploration. At the postmodern level, it's about spiritual exploration. We also find at the postmodern level a greater emphasis on consensus, on community, on diversity. The rights of the minorities are upheld. And other religions are not just tolerated, they're warmly embraced. There's a recognition that, yes, we are following our way-shower into what we call Christ consciousness, but that Christ consciousness is really no different than Buddha consciousness, Krishna consciousness, whatever you want to call it. But this is our path. And so we respect and honor all of those. Well, unity is at the postmodern level, and it isn't just me saying so, it's Paul Smith saying so also. And the reason we're at the postmodern level is because these are values of inclusivity and diversity and honoring all paths to God and seeing Jesus as way-shower, etc., in the name of love, that have been a part of the unity movement for 125-plus years. We can also say that these emergent churches are moving into the modern and maybe even the postmodern level. Well, that feels pretty good, doesn't it? Here we are at the top of the heap. But wait, there's more. Because Paul Smith tells us there's yet another level coming in the evolution of Christianity and church, and it's called the integral level. At the integral level. At the integral level, something very, very significant happens. Because up until this point, through the evolution, each level that has come about has felt like they were right. Oh, we got this. Never mind all that other stuff. We got all that fixed. And so there's never been a sense of really honoring and valuing the previous levels for what they offer. When you get to the integral stage, that changes. But the integral church, integral Christianity, is all about looking at the other stages and appreciating the ways in which they have contributed to where we are now, acknowledging that people may need to be at that stage for now. And that is okay. There's an acceptance. And from that acceptance and that inclusivity and valuing all paths, we move into really a higher level of consciousness, a higher okayness, a real sense of how all this fits together and it's all good. So how do we get to that next level of integral? Well, Paul Smith offers a few insights. And one of them, he says, we must be willing to let go of our anger. This is big. You know, there are plenty of people that come to unity that are very angry. We give them shelter from the storm. We love each other. But I do believe we are really here to heal and move on. And so here's what he says about anger. Many of us who have left the traditional stage have had to deal with our anger at the oppressive elements there. Our anger at the time gave us energy to move on. Eventually, we need to also move on from our anger at the traditional church and see it as a valuable and often necessary step in our spiritual evolution. Then he goes on to say, the traditional church has sheltered and fed multitudes of serious Christians for centuries upon centuries. It is the nurturing place for most of the Christians in the world today. It has given us profound theologians, great saints, and pioneering mystics. It has provided a launching pad for all the following stages. And then he says it has been and continues to be a stately mansion even as we evolve more stately mansions. There's a forgiveness aspect in that work, in that healing work. The second thing is somewhat related, is we must be willing to let people be at whatever stage they are at. This can be really huge. But everybody is at the stage they need to be right now. And Paul Smith reiterates that Spirit works through every stage to move people to where they need to get to. And it is really not our business to say what stage people should be in, even if we're in a different level. And he also says something I found this very interesting and actually very helpful. He said that someone cannot see your point, for example, if their worldview does not allow for that. And what he's saying is that in the traditional level, for example, it's really grounded in tradition. It's grounded in what people have always said in this denomination or this church, and it's really just following along with that. It's not based on reason. Reason is really at one of the other levels. And so when you try to address someone at the traditional level and speak reason, like, wait, did you know this? Did you know this little bit of information about how the Bible was written? Or do you know, how Christianity or any of that, it doesn't connect. Because reason is not a part of how they arrived at their spiritual path. And so really, everyone's on their own path. We just let that be, and we trust in that. Doesn't mean we don't stand in what's true for us. But it leads us to this third point, which is to keep focused on what is most important. What is most important is what's happening in us, in the work that we are doing within us. Paul Smith says, it is good to worship Jesus, but it is even more important to become like him. He says, the goal of authentic Christianity is not to be a Christian. The goal is to be a Christ. And by that, we mean the highest expression of God in humankind, to really fully know our oneness with God and with each other. So in all of this, unity has, I believe, a perfect role to play. I believe we are very well positioned to help lead the way into this new Christianity. And you may think, well, why do we really need that? You know we're all good. We know all paths lead to God, etc. But here's what I believe about that. That there's still something exquisite and not fully expressed in the teachings of Jesus. There's something he was pointing us to, a vision that he was holding, not about salvation, the philosophy of Paul, but it was about the kingdom of heaven right here on earth. To throw that out is like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. I feel like there's still something that hasn't come to full fruition. And if we can get past what has gotten in the way of it, we can come home. And the other thing is to realize that Christianity is the largest religion in the world. If we begin to change what Christianity stands for, what it values, and how we show up, we change the world. We truly do. And so when we work on our spiritual growth here, we're not only building an expanded, inclusive community. In my mind, we are creating a model for what Christianity can be. Inclusive Christianity, integral Christianity, Christianity that honors all people and all paths. And Paul Smith feels that way as well. So I'd like to share with you, before we began our spiritual discovery groups, I contacted him because I have had the pleasure of knowing him and teaming with him. And he said that he would not be able to come. I asked him if he would please come. We would really love that. He couldn't make it because of his schedule. At the end of his email, this is what he said. Let me say again how much I value unity in your work. I believe unity is the one Christian group most poised to move into the integrative stage. Mainlining an integrally informed Christian approach, which basically means at the local church level, moving into this consciousness. He says, doing that in a local church setting is a powerful way to approach this. I want to support you in every way I can. And so he's offered to do a Skype session with us, a Q&A session, and maybe at the end of our series we'll be able to take advantage of that. You know, for those who have fled organized religion, all we can do is be the light that we are and show that there is another way. And to really appreciate that what we are doing here, when we live into these truths, is noble work. It is Jesus' work. It is the work of a community united in love, committed to spiritual growth. And so if I were to go back and had the opportunity to go back and whisper in the ear of that little 8-year-old girl standing on the Georgia clay hillside, I would say to her, you just hang in there. Things are getting better. Just watch. Let's move now to our meditation. Let's take a deep breath in. Close your eyes if that's comfortable for you. And release and let go. Just shaking off any busy thoughts, any random concerns, and just allow spirit to wash over you. Feeling this beautiful presence of love and peace. And appreciating the sense of coming home. Let's take another deep breath in. And as we release, just relax a little bit more deeply into the perfection of this moment and the perfection of the path that you have already followed. I invite you to take a moment to appreciate how every step of your journey has led you to where you are today. The lessons, the insights, the downfalls, the triumphs, all of it. And here you are. And here we are, poised for what can be. In this moment, we feel our connection with each other. We feel our connection with the divine. We honor our way shower, our master teacher, and feel his wisdom living in us. I invite you to turn within to this holy presence in you and to enjoy that oneness in the silence. With hearts full of gratitude, we give thanks for infinite spirit. We give thanks for the wonders of this existence, for the ways in which things unfold, the ways in which they come to make sense. We appreciate the all rightness of all of it. We serve it up with such gratitude to the infinite presence of the living, loving God. And so it is, and so we let it be. Amen.